That was the sound of an M777 howitzer, and I'm Captain Adam Wharton with the Canadian Army Podcast. A soldier with a rifle can hit a target at a few dozen meters. A team of gunners with an artillery piece can hit all the targets at a few dozen kilometers. This episode is about what it's like to be a gunner and what needs to happen to get rounds on target. I'm here on the road in Petawawa with Sergeant Darren Gaines from the 2nd Regiment Royal Canadian Horse Artillery, and he's going to tell us what being a gunner is all about. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So the most impressive experience I've had with artillery is it's literally physics in the action. When that round is coming in, you can hear it splitting through the air and just makes this kablamo sound. And that's a real thing to experience. What's it like on your end?
So for myself, I'm a gun detachment commander. So for us, we deploy to the field or on operations. The orders come in, we go to an area and we set up. Okay. And with that setup, my team of gunners, so I have a second command, a driver, and 8 gunners, and we bring the gun into action. And once we're recorded, once we're in action, then we stand by for the call for fire.
And then when it happens, big bangs.
Big bangs. That's right.
So what's the artillery's role on the battlefield? Like what does the artillery do?
I would say the artillery provides indirect fire support for forward call signs being infantry and armored, but it's not limited to the infantry and armored.
Of course. Yeah. Whoever's up there.
Anyone can call for fire. You know, if we're within range, we're going to provide you that support.
You want to explain maybe a little bit of the difference between direct and indirect fire?
So indirect fire, that's like your normal fire mission that's going to come down. So we don't see the target. We record these reference objects and then we aim off of those reference objects. So we can achieve targets, you know, with conventional ammunition, 20, 21 kilometers away. And with precision guided munitions, we can achieve accurate targets up to 38, 40 kilometers.
What's a precision guided munition?
We're talking about the Excalibur round.
Yes, of course. Everybody's favorite. I heard it recently described as firing a Ferrari.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it. Personally, I haven't trained on them, fired them. They're very few and far between for domestic training. And why is because they're incredibly expensive. But if you can drop a laser point and it's within the target area, within the distance, we can put a round on that laser point.
Yeah, that's super cool. And you have to be able to really appreciate the fact that that's 40 kilometers away or something like that. And this thing will land within a couple of meters.
10 meters, within 10 meters.
That's wild. So that's indirect fire in a nutshell. And then obviously direct fire is when you can see your target and you're firing at it. And I've always found as an infantry soldier, it's like you can see what's happening on the battlefield and you get to have that experience. But I imagine as a gunner, you don't get that opportunity. When do gunners get to see that?
Yes. Yeah, so there are a few instances where I will get to see that round impact. So a big thing we like to train for is called open action. So for open actions, what happens is a gun is detached from a gun battery and they go and link up with a forward call sign, usually infantry, maybe armored. And the situation is usually there's something out there that they can't tackle themselves. Huh. So I'm going to go link in with that person. I'm going to ask them a lot of questions. I'm going to build a bit of a situational awareness of what's around. And from there, I'm going to start building my data that I'm going to send to the gun. From there, I go back, bring the gun up, bring it into action. The gunners do their jobs. They do it well. And I stand off to the side of the gun. I issue my orders and we fire the bullet and I can see where it lands and adjust it onto the target.
That's really interesting because I've never seen that actually in action. You know, and if you're from a certain era, I know people who joined in the 80s that are still around. You have people who joined in the 90s. You know, I trained for Afghanistan, got to deploy there. And I guess as a product of a 2000s army person, the deployments that I've been a part of and the training I've been a part of hasn't included that a lot, but that's clearly part of the playbook. Why is that important? Where does that fit into the story?
Yeah, the situation they normally give us is that there's a enemy vehicle out there that maybe had a mobility kill that can still fight you. So it's a static target. It's not going to drive away as soon as we open up fire. And we're going to really put some precision fire, you know, direct fire onto that target.
Okay.
But we talk about Afghanistan. I wasn't in during that period, but I can't see a lot of those situations arising, especially like we provide that indirect effect. Mm. And from people I talked to, they were able to achieve target results without having to do an open action.
That's correct. I think during my tour, we fired like 1,000 rounds in combat, which is apparently a lot. And my understanding of direct fire support from the artillery has always been final protective fire, which is everything is going bad now and the bad guys are here and that's not good. It's like a rifle. A rifle is a standoff weapon. If you're using a rifle at 10 meters, it's bad. It's got a range of 300 meters. Use all 300 meters. So artillery has, let's say, 20 kilometer range. When you are firing at 500 meters,
things have gone bad.
Yeah, things have gone bad. So what other situations would you use direct fire in?
So another situation that kind of plays out is our smoke withdrawal. So you're on a gun position. Maybe the enemy has broken through. So we train for a smoke withdrawal. So you lay down as much smoke as possible. And while your last gun is firing, the rest are packing up and leaving so that you can still provide support for call signs and not be taken out by maybe an enemy tank rolling up in your position.
Wow, that's really cool. I'm already learning a lot about the artillery. So let's talk a little bit about the gear then. You know, you're talking about precision guided munitions and stuff. The guns. What do we got? What are we working with?
When I was in the reserves, we utilized the LG-1 howitzer, which is a 105 millimeter howitzer. And then it depends on what part of the country that you're in. If you're on the East Coast, you're probably going to be using the LG-1s. The further you go west, you're looking at C3 howitzers, which is another 105 howitzer.
Nice.
If you find yourself in a Reg Force unit, you're going to be looking at the M777, 155 millimeter howitzer. The pros to it is that it's a versatile weapon system. It can be transported via air. So we train often for helicopter underslung operations.
Yeah, I think that is the big selling point, is it can be sling loaded and dropped off pretty much anywhere, which is hard to do with most guns, as far as I understand.
Guns, for the most part, are pretty heavy, right? The M777 is relatively light.
Yeah.
But we found ourselves in March. We hooked up to the Chinooks at 450 and we deployed to the field. And that's also how we got out of the field.
Yeah, it's super cool and a lot of fun. Helicopters are fun in general, I would say.
Yes.
And this is a weird question because it's like, what kind of ammunition? But ammunition also in some ways translates to effects. What kind of effects can you have on the battlefield with that?
So we shoot a variety of ammunition. When you think of artillery, you think of, you know, high explosive projectiles.
Yeah, big boom.
And what we can do, we can shake up how that relates to the ground. So we can have, you know, ground burst. We can fire delay where the projectile goes in a little further. And then you also have proximity. Okay, so your airburst. We also fire smoke rounds and illumination rounds. So smoke rounds, we can provide blinding or screening for friendly targets. So you're going to screen friendlies and blind the enemy. For illumination, we can turn the nighttime into day with a couple of loom rounds. We can also use that for mark missions to reference fast air in the area and bring more accurate effects from that aircraft onto the target.
Yeah, and mark missions are pretty great. You get to put that dot on the ground where explosions are supposed to happen. So if you're operating at night and you don't have situational awareness, then at least you know you have a spot where things are going to happen and you're going to get that big boom where you want it. Speaking of big boom, how big is the boom?
So you're looking at a 50 meter kill radius for 155 high explosive.
That's a lot.
It's a lot.
And what kind of impact does that have on a target area?
So I'll give you the key phrase here. The weapon of the artillery is the projectile.
All right, great. Now we're talking.
I just made someone engaged and I'm very happy for saying that.
Yeah.
So what does that look like? It looks like a lot of shrapnel. So when those rounds explode, especially if we're talking proximity, that 50 meter kill radius, imagine 100 pounds of high explosive going off within a steel container. That steel gets turned into a couple hundred different knives going every which direction. So don't find yourself within that 50 meters.
So that's how the artillery works operationally. Now let's talk about coming out of basic training. So you learn how to tie your boots, you learn how to put your uniform on, all that stuff, and off you go to artillery school. What are you learning there? How does your career kind of get started?
So I believe the term is rank qualification 1 now these days. And what you're going to learn is You're going to learn about fire discipline. You're going to learn about maybe driving some basic military vehicles.
Yep.
And then you're going to learn how to communicate on a radio and how to use that radio equipment. But it doesn't really kind of round you out to be utilized in that role in a regiment. So then you complete that course. Now you move on to a regiment. They're going to put you in one of the streams and then get you the qualifications that you need for those streams. Those streams being one, you have your gunline stream. So you can find yourself in a recce or reconnaissance party, a command post crew, or on a gun det itself. You could also be employed in another stream being surveillance, target, and acquisition, and be employed as a potential drone flyer, an LCMR operator.
Light counter mortar radar.
Correct. Now they've added on air defense as well. And then the other stream is going to be the observation party. So you could find yourself in a party with a forward observation officer, their second in command being a master bombardier or a sergeant. And you'd find yourself either as the communication operator, the radio operator, or the LAV-6 driver.
And do people get to bounce back and forth a little bit? Or like, is that your life now?
So for the most part, once you pick a stream, well, you're going to spend some time there. Whether that time is a year, 2 years, you can, you know, write your memo, submit it up, and they can change you between streams. And now that's your career path. It's not fixed. It's not set in stone. But for longevity of the artillery, we wish for it to go that way.
Why is that?
So, for example, if I, a sergeant, were to change streams now, it's almost like a reset. So now I have my, you know, gun det commander course. You know, that sets me on a bit of a career path. But if I were to say I wish to change streams now, I wish to be surveillance target acquisition, I lack the courses to be in a leadership role for that stream.
Right. So it's the classic jack of all trades versus specialization gambit, where the more you do a thing, the more experienced you are, you become really good at it. But if you do a little bit of everything, then you know other things, but you don't know as much about the one thing.
Think of it as like the artillery is very trade specific. And if you bounce between them, you kind of lose expertise in that role.
Yeah. Skill fade.
Well, skill fade, but I wouldn't necessarily have the experience or the courses to go over and lead a drone crew in F Battery, for example.
Right. Okay. So speaking of drones, the drone stuff, I guess, falls under STA, surveillance target acquisition.
Right. So they have a variety of equipment that they can use for the sound detection, for surveillance. You know, they're the drone flyers of the artillery. And for that, you have a battery per regiment, or you have the regiment itself in Gagetown, 4th General Support Regiment, and they'll be your drone flyers. So imagine you have this regiment in Gagetown, and then you have like a piece of that pie in each regiment across Canada.
Actually, just because I'm curious, why does artillery get drones? Where does drones fit into this? Why drones?
So surveillance and target acquisition. So they can provide surveillance on certain targets and really paint a good picture of what's going on in the battle space. They can also be used as observers. Those drone flyers, they see something, it's a target that's achievable to hit. They can provide the call for fire from the drone. And that goes back to the command post. They take that information in and it comes out as gun orders. And we can achieve, you know, target effect with a call for fire from a drone.
And let's talk about the observation piece then. What does that look like?
So, you know, when these crews go out, more often than not, they're mounted in a vehicle. That vehicle is going to be a LAV-6. You're going to have a forward observation officer, usually a sergeant or a master bombardier in the gunner's seat, along with signalers and drivers to support that team.
And how do they integrate into the rest of the fight? Like, if I think about Afghanistan, you have your forward observation officer or your FOO team, and you got a captain in there, maybe a bombardier or master bombardier or whatever. They get to go out and play a little bit more?
I would say yes, 100%. So those forward observation parties are going to be attached to the infantry call signs or armored call signs that cross that line of departure, and they're your first point of contact when you want fire support.
You know, let's start from the beginning of what a task looks like. So you're in your armory, or you're operating out of your regiment, or maybe a forward operating base, and it's go time. We're going to go out and we're going to fire some rounds. What does that look like? Actually, if you could start by introducing the team, who's all involved in this?
So for the gun line, it's kind of broken down into three parties. So you have your guns, which is going to be broken down into troops. Right now we're operating with two guns per troop. So that's your gun line crew. Then you have your reconnaissance party. So the recce party will be kicked out. They're the people to receive orders and they're the first ones out the door. What they're going to do is they're going to go out and prove the area and set up and be ready to receive the guns, make sure the position is suitable. And then your other crews or parties within a gun battery is going to be your command post. And they're the, in my mind, the brain of the gun battery.
Right.
So the BC, the battery commander, issues orders, comes up with the plan, issues it to the guns, CP crews, and recce party. The recce party is going to go out and start doing their business. And then once we receive, you know, the all clear from them, we're going to now push out to the field. We're going to occupy that gun position. And as soon as we're recorded, we are ready to provide a call for fire.
When we talk about M777s, I think they're towed. So you're hooking them up to trucks. You got trucks and stuff like that rolling out. What kind of gear are you moving with?
Right now, the makeup of a gun line is, like, for myself as a deck commander, I have two trucks. They're both Mack trucks, eight-wheeled vehicles. You have a gun tow variant and a troop carry vehicle. So you have your driver, your gun deck commander in the gun tow with, you know, obviously towing the gun. You have all your gun stores and your ammo. And then your troops are going to operate out of the troop carry vehicle.
What happens now?
We link in with the recce party and then we bring the guns into action. So the gun truck pulls up. I walk the gun onto position. The crews dismount from their vehicles. They come back out, unhook the gun. And, you know, we go through our drills to bring that gun into action. Once the gun is in action, we have our ammo sitting behind the gun. It all happens within, I'm going to say, 3 to 4 minutes.
It's pretty quick.
It's pretty quick for a big artillery piece.
Does it feel quick?
It doesn't at the time because you're lifting some pretty heavy things.
Yeah, I bet.
Which can make time drag on a little longer, but it does relatively, it happens quick.
And then the crew has put the gun in position. Fire mission is coming down the pipe, I guess.
Unfortunately, it's never that fast because, you know, you're waiting for that call for fire. So now that you're ready to provide that call for fire, the first thing that happens as soon as the gun's, you know, brought into action is you're going to push out some local defense. So as much as you're supposed to be operating in a relatively safe area, it doesn't mean that the enemy can't be in your area, right?
So that's right.
We're going to push out some machine guns. We're going to push out some Carl Gs, so Carl Gustav 84 millimeter. And we're going to utilize our armored vehicles that roll with the gun line. So, for example, in Canada, we have TAP Vs, but in Latvia, you have TAP Vs, and your command post and maybe a recce unit would utilize a LAV 6. So, you're going to put those out into some key areas to provide security for your gun line.
TAP V is Tactical Armor Patrol Vehicle.
Correct. And on top, we have a C6 general purpose machine gun and a 40 millimeter automatic grenade launcher.
So, you do your own local security, generally speaking, then, based off what you just said.
Correct.
Wow.
Our big mandate is to be able to provide our own local defense of the gun line provided by ourselves.
Okay. That's interesting. Pre-podcast, looking into some stuff and found out that TAP Vs were also a part of the artillery loadout. And I was like, I wonder why that is. And now I know.
We use them a lot for the recce parties, reconnaissance parties that go out.
Mm-hmm.
So one, they're going to use that vehicle to prove the area safe. If anyone shoots at them, they know that they're probably not safe.
Yeah, that's right.
And it does provide a little bit of armor for security of the crews. And now we have a weapon system that we can engage back with.
It's interesting because I think of like infantry tactics, for example, and you're setting up in a hide, which is basically just a spot you're going to be for a while. To kind of sort your stuff out and get some sleep or whatever, you do that security process, which is you roll in, you sweep the whole area, you make sure there's no surprises like landmines or things like that, and then you get all set up. And so you have that same process because there's nothing worse than setting up your artillery and finding out there are bad guys there the whole time, and now you have that problem.
Or you find yourself in a minefield.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay, so then fire mission comes in. What happens?
So a call for fire, you're going to receive that warning order. The warning order is going to be a variety of things. It could be fire mission one gun, fire mission battery, fire mission regiment. So what does that do? We now take our positions in action on the gun. So we're going to elevate the barrels and ready for orders to come out from our command post. So we're going to get a ammunition order. At a minimum, we're going to receive an ammunition order, a bearing, an elevation, and a method of adjustment or fire for effect. So depending on what the mission is, we could go into adjustment, which means there's a target out there. We're going to put a round on the ground, see where it lands, and adjust that onto that target. Or if the guns are dialed in and we can achieve first round results, we're going to go right into fire for effect.
And the adjusting of rounds onto a target is a real art, I would say. Have you done any of that stuff yourself?
As a gun deck commander, we do train for it. It is not in the realm of what I would be expected to do all the time in the field. that's going to fall onto the observation party itself. So you're going to have people very well trained on bracketing procedure to achieve positive data. Okay, we know where these rounds are going to go. And then when the adjustment is over, the guns open up and all the guns will fall onto that target.
If I'm calling in a fire mission as an example, I'm in a place and I'm looking at a target. So I know where I am relative to that target. But then there's a lot of math that I assume needs to happen to make sure that all the things are pointing right there. And then all of a sudden, you also have to deal with the problem of where are the friendlies and all of that stuff. So I feel like that's a lot of paperwork.
Paperwork, not so much. It's a lot of communication.
Right.
So with that communication piece, like you have to take into factors considerations of is air moving in the area, friendly positions. So not only is this information coming in, but it also has to be double checked to make sure that we're not going to put those effects that we talk about onto something that we don't want to have that effect onto, being friendly soldiers, civilians, collateral damage, XYZ. There's a lot of different factors that play into it.
And I assume also a lot of computers doing some of that math for us.
Right. So we train for both. We train to do it. You know, there is the command post crew going through this information. I mean, let's talk about factors on the projectile. Rotation of the earth, drift, the spin of the bullet is going to move it a certain direction. Weather plays a huge factor. Yeah. So if we're not utilizing the computer system, it can take a very long time. With the computers and the digitization of the artillery these days, it can shorten it drastically, like in a big positive way.
Speed and quality. So what are people doing, like your gun team? How's that moving?
In the fire mission? So yeah. What you're going to see is the gunners, bombers standing at the gun, waiting for the orders to come down. And once that's achieved, you're going to see them. It's almost like artillery ballet.
A dance
where it all kind of comes together. So you have your loaders and people that work the howitzer. So just to load a round, for example, you set the fuse, put it on the tray, drop the tray, the charge bags go in, the tray is then raised, the breech is closed, the gun is primed, and now you're ready to fire.
And how many people does that take?
So on a gun detachment, you're looking at 10. It can be done with less than 10. It's not ideal, but it's possible and is done more often than, you know, we might like. But the fact is, like, I can run a gun with 4 to 5 people.
Yeah, there was a discussion. We were talking about military effectiveness in general around the office. And the thing is, you get speed and accuracy. And anytime you take stuff away, you get less of one or both of those. And so conceivably, less people means less fast or potentially less accurate, depending on.
You also have to think, too, like, sustainment, like how long can you sustain a high rate of fire? Because obviously, as time goes on, people become tired. Those bullets weigh 100 pounds a piece. And when you're slinging 40, 50, 60 bullets at a time, that can take its toll on a gun crew.
What is your, let's call it, maximum rate of fire non-sustained?
Ooh, you're asking all the hard questions here. There is a textbook answer. I think it's the correct answer is 5 to 6 rounds a minute, but it's not sustainable. And sustained rate of fire, you're looking at 3 rounds per minute.
Well, this is a thing that comes up in a lot of philosophical talk is sustainability, right? Which is, people say 110% is impossible. 120% is impossible. Disagree. I would say you can do 120%, but it's just not sustainable. It's unrealistic and usually comes at a cost, right? Which is maybe you've sacrificed on the back end your ability to do other stuff later and so on and so forth. And I think that's what we're talking about. And you said, what was the sustain rate?
3 rounds per minute.
Yeah, pretty reasonable. And so you've done it. Recce parties have done all their stuff. You've rolled out. You're all set up. You've received orders. You're firing things. Now you've fired. I'm assuming one of two things happens, which is either you stay there and do more firing later, or it's time to get out of Dodge.
That is correct. So given the scenario, given the situation, we could encounter a high counter battery threat. If that's the case, when you fire, you have unmasked your guns and you're now a potential target. So we could receive counter battery fire within as little as 6 minutes. So that gives us 6 minutes from the time we fire our first round to complete our fire mission and get 400 meters down. We train for 400 meters down the road.
How do they know where you are?
So as much as we have our surveillance target and acquisition capabilities, so does the enemy. So they have detection equipment out there, drones, a lot of detection equipment that can pick us up and say, we think the enemy is right here. So when we fire, we produce a little blip on the radar, for lack of a better term. Now they know where we are and we have to leave.
Yeah. And how quickly can you get out of there?
So we train for this scenario often in Latvia. And in Latvia, we had our time down to 6 minutes and 47 seconds to be 400 meters down the road from the time we fired our first projectile.
So let's talk about recent deployments. You said you were in Latvia. How was that?
Yeah, so Latvia was my first deployment. We went from May of 2023 to December 2023, so a six-month stint. I was with D-Battery 2RCHA. You're looking at a training exercise once a month and a lot of opportunity to train with other nations. So over there, we were comprised of, you know, Canada with a gun battery. The Spanish had a gun battery. Czechoslovakians, Czech Slovenians, and Latvians have their own artillery. We didn't play a lot with them, but with the multinational artillery brigade, you know, we were able to achieve some good training and a lot of interoperability.
Yeah, one of the previous episodes we were talking about kind of the multinational brigade and all of that. There's a lot of artillery going out there. I've heard of large infantry formations doing lots of infantry stuff. I haven't heard a lot of large artillery formations doing a lot of artillery stuff. What's that like?
It's cool because in Canada, we see, you know, very limited use of artillery. It's a regiment. It's a battery going out to achieve, more often than not, just training aims. But over there, they understand that it's a big key player on the battle space. And the fact that when we go out the door, it's not just Canada fighting all these battles on their own. We're going to have to work with all these other nations to achieve NATO aims.
Did you learn anything, or is there a big takeaway that you got from being out there? Or just like, huh, that's useful to me now?
I would say the digitalization of the artillery is definitely the way to go. And it is the way the Canadian military is going. Yeah, I would say like digital fires can greatly reduce the, you know, sensor to shooter link. And we can really provide that time before it might take 10 minutes to see those rounds on the ground. Now we can achieve it in much less time.
I really like the usage of that word sensor to shooter link, because it sounds very technical, but it's very straightforward. It is the path from I need this thing to
providing that effect.
Yeah, very cool. On that note, thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
That was Sergeant Darren Keynes from the 2nd Regiment Royal Canadian Horse Artillery here in Petawawa. And I'm Captain Adam Morton for the Canadian Army Podcast. Morton out.